talk is just a general study of arsenic around a mine site that's in close proximity to a town stall, and you can see this is actually taken from the hill overlooking the mine site in eastern Australia. The area we're looking at, it's about 230 kilometres northwest of Melbourne. You can see there's Melbourne there, so we're right down here in the southeast corner. And this is the Stall gold mine here in the township. This area between Stall, Ballarat and Bendigo was considered the Golden Triangle in our gold rush in the 1850s in Australia. So there was a lot of alluvial gold, then they found quartz veins, and now they're digging a little deeper in some just a few current mining operations in the area. The actual Stall township has about 6,000 people, and the mine is located less than 2 kilometres from the actual town centre, so there's a close integration between the population and the mining activities. I will sometimes refer to the Stall gold mine as Big Hill because it is the topographic high in the area, and it is what the locals call that site. They're mining gold-bearing sulphides now underground. There is some open pit operations in the area in the past. And these sulphides contain significant amounts of arsenic and other potentially hazardous elements such as lead and chromium. I won't talk too much about those, but I will touch on them, and I guess it's moving for some reason. And the key question the mine wanted to know was, are they contributing to the arsenic content in the surrounding environment, and are these soils potentially hazardous to human health? So the objective was to determine whether they were hazardous, to measure a total arsenic concentration, and also get an estimation of the bioavailability of the arsenic in the soils, have a look at the actual soils themselves and where the arsenic is sited, and then trying to define a little bit of the natural and the anthropogenic enrichment in that environment, and finally to assess the exposure levels to humans. So we sampled 10 regional background soils. These were actually sampled in profiles, but this study just looked at the surface environment. So we collected 10 surface soils as our background, and this was within about a 15 kilometre radius from representative soil types. And then we collected about 50 soil samples from over the area around the mine, the 2 kilometre Big Hill central area. We did a new total digestion, a bioavailable extraction, which is recommended by the Australian New Zealand Environmental Council. And that's a proxy for stomach acid, I guess. It's 1 molar HCl, 1 hour at about 37 degrees Celsius. It's not accurate, but it is an estimate. Analysis for arsenic and other things, other metals and metalloids, was by ICP, MS and OES. We did some element maps with SEM. And then more recently, I've just obtained some synchrotron work from Brookhaven National Labs in New York that I'll just present briefly. So this is the background. This is the closest thing we come to a soils map in Australia. They're not very common. This is the actual Stall townships in here, and these are some of the background sites and the various types. You can't define those. And for those of you that like looking at soil profiles, I've just got a few of the typical profiles that were sampled in this area and some of the landscape environment. So it's an agriculture and a eucalypt woodland sort of area. Now the actual aerial or satellite image, you can see this is the actual town site here. This is the main street of the town, and here is the mine operations and the portal. This area at the back side is all tailings area, and this is the actual Big Hill region that was sampled. And you can see this is just an elevation sort of model over the top, and you can see the higher parts. One thing to note is that the town water supply is also in this mining area, and there was a lot of earlier mining activity up through here, but nowadays it's all underground. Just looking at where the arsenic actually occurs in these soils, we did a little polished block. You can see quite a few quartz fragments and other bits and pieces. And then backscatter SEM picks out some iron oxides, and these are actually probably originally sulfides that have had iron replacement. And then we've got some clays, and they've also got some little iron bands in there as well. They're light rich clays, and you can see the quartz in the dull grey, and that clearly shows up in the silica map. And again, the iron, of course, shows up the iron oxides. And what you see with the arsenic map, although we're at the detection limits here, the brighter spots are getting close to probably 1%, but we are getting an indication that some of the brighter blue areas seem to be associated with these iron, and not just the iron oxide or the replacement after sulfide, but also in the clays as well. This is the synchrotron work. This was about a 1 centimetre or just greater than 1 centimetre squared area, not the same area we saw in the previous slide, but this data was compiled in about 6 hours. So for that sort of an area, that's much. Normally it would take 2 to 3 days at least. So this was testing a new detector more than actually looking for arsenic like I wanted. So we don't actually have arsenic speciation data from this data set yet. But you can see a little bit of the iron. This is red, green, blue, so the iron and the red. What you see, the arsenic in the blue in some of these spots is sort of a native arsenic. And you also see what the purple combination is, where the iron and the arsenic are associated. So nothing unexpected that the iron and the arsenic are associated, but we're also picking this up in the synchrotron as well. Lead, although I won't go into it, is also in some of these same iron arsenic sites as well. Moving into the chemistry side of things, this is some of the totals and bioavailable concentrations. So the area is naturally enriched in arsenic. The regional background soils have about 9 milligrams per kilogram, parts per million, with a maximum of about 16. And you see the bioavailable concentration is very low. Contrasting that, the bioavailable concentration around the actual mine site and the Big Hill area is quite a lot higher. And the totals are much higher again. So we're looking at an average of about 175 parts per million in the area around the mine, and a maximum of nearly 1,000 milligrams per kilogram. Plotting that up, bubble plots, so the hotter colours are the larger bubbles are the higher concentrations. And this is just to get an indication of maybe the anthropogenic and the natural enrichment in the area. You see this high area here, and this correlates very well with the actual strike of the mineralisation and where the arsenic halo that would be naturally associated with this area. And then you also see what I consider probably some anthropogenic enrichment around the actual mine site itself. So there's grinding of the sulfidic dusts here, and there's probably a little bit of arsenic that's coming out of that. You see the background, we've got good low contrast there. The bioavailable arsenic, however, is a bit different. It's around the mine site, as we expect, or the current mine site, but also along the edge of the town and sort of close to the water supply as well. But this is actually where some of the old mine workings from the 1800s actually occur as well, which I think is probably what is contributing to the higher bioavailable arsenic in that area. So just combining these into a general enrichment score to get just an indication of hotspots possibly. This is just averaging also on arsenic, but I'm incorporating chromium and lead into this as well, just to get another indication of the higher areas in terms of enrichment. What you find is with the total sort of enrichment, so that you find this picks out the strike of the mineralisation very well, straight through here. That's a natural occurrence of the elevated or the high concentrations of arsenic, chromium and lead. The bioavailable, footprint, although it is much larger, so it's all over this area, and this area has been used for agriculture as well, pesticides and things like that, so it's expected that the halo would be a bit bigger. One thing this enables is that you can then pick out areas that may warrant further investigation or areas of concern. This was by far the highest scores were in this area, as well as this one, and then the mine site comes in a third, I guess, for areas of large enrichment. And finally, the question was, how much soil can kids start to eat before they die? And that was one of the bigger questions. And so we did the bioavailable extraction, and using just data that you can obtain from literature, we risk reference doses and the daily consumptions, you can calculate how much soil would be consumed by children playing out in this area and whether they're at risk. So the average child consumes about 200 milligrams per day just by playing, dirt on their fingers, in their mouths, that sort of stuff. And this at these levels, none of the mean daily exposure intakes would cause health problems and long-term exposure effects. You see, this is based on a per kilogram calculation here. But I've used an example of a 12 kilogram or 27 pounds toddler, and see what sort of on the average bioavailable they would have to eat at least 12 grams of soil per day, or 1.5 to show some sort of ill health effects. Whereas in the area where there was the most bioavailable arsenic, we're right at that 200 milligram cutoff. So if the child was playing in that one area continuously, then there could be potential risks. Where this does become a problem is a soil eating disorder called geophagy, where children usually have deficiencies in something, probably iron, and they start to eat soil. And they can actually consume 50 to 60 grams of soil in a day. If you had a child in this area that was consuming large amounts of soil, they would be they would show probably poor health effects for not only arsenic but also chromium and lead in this area. They would easily go above those limits. So basically, the arsenic is naturally high in this area. It's associated with the iron oxides, both as a, as I mentioned, the pseudomorphs after sulfide weathering, but also in clays as a fracture fills. The study did enable some assessment of the anthropogenic and natural enrichment. It was just a rough sort of assessment, but it does give an indication. And it mainly indicate that the Stall gold mine is not actually contributing greatly to the amount of arsenic in the area, and most of this was probably from previous mining activities, agriculture and other factors. The soils on the eastern edge near the actual mine, near the township, are actually the most hazardous in the area in relation to human health. And small children are typically not exposed to these soils every day. They're not out there playing constantly, and so the health effects are minimal in this area. So although it has a naturally high arsenic environment, the actual health effects are really quite small and not too much to get alarmed about. I just not acknowledge the various groups that have helped in this research, and I'm happy to take any questions if you have.
Yes, you use the RFD, which is usually to calculate the amount of acceptable amount or concentration of arsenic that would cause a problem to children. But the RFD is non-cancer. Do you look at the cancer or lifetime? Is that a concern, lifetime effect?
I haven't really considered those sorts of things. It was just to get a general view of the health.
That'd be an interesting calculation. That's usually a tougher number.
Yeah.
You bring slope factor and cancer into it.
Are there other questions?
This project started out as we've been doing some work on the tailings areas initially, because they actually have quite a lot more arsenic than that, and the remediation of the tailings sites, and then from that, the understanding that there was quite a bit of arsenic in the tailings, they wanted to know, was there arsenic in other parts of the area as well, and then from there it actually became an exploration project as well, looking at arsenic as a pathfinder back to mineralisation to the north of here. So it's a multifaceted, I guess, project in some ways, but that's how it initially started, from the tailings rehabilitation work.
Anyone else have a question?
Yeah, sure.
Give me a little
bit. That's all right.
Just one quick. I think your method is fine, probably. The one molar HCl is a good estimate of bioaccessible, but not bioavailable. And it's just a language thing, where we're all trying to stop using the word bioavailable unless there's an organism that absorbed it.
Yeah.
There's a membrane across.
Yeah.
And so, since there isn't any membrane here, you may, in the past I've used potentially bioavailable, and I've been corrected all the time.
Yep.
To go to bioaccessible, which is kind of a term that everybody seems to know is extracted, but maybe kind of good.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. There's no plans to do any sort of in vitro studies or anything follow up.
I would just change it. Bioavailable, bioaccessible, or it's a fair warning.
Yeah.
People in the audience, not in this audience, maybe, but other audiences will confused and upset. Anyway.
I have a quick question for you. Did you have any evidence for discrete arsenic phases when you looked at those? I mean, you showed a nice association with the iron oxide, but I did notice there were kind of some real tight balls there.
Yeah, that's sort of the actual sort of native arsenic or something like that. I wasn't expecting. So that was that when that synchrotron stuff came back, I was quite surprised at that. I've done some sequential extractions on other parts, and I found it was associated with iron oxide in that part as well in that method. But I hadn't seen any of just the arsenic, so I was quite surprised at that. And maybe we can try and get a little bit more out of that data in the future.
Great. Thank you.